Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Hello and welcome to another edition of Mormon Stories Podcast. My name is John DeLynn. I'm very excited to have you with us today for a very special feature. Today we have with us a longtime listener approached me a few weeks ago about discussing the issue of divorce. He comes from an LDS family, and that family experienced a divorce several years ago. And he felt like it could be interesting for us to bring all of his family onto the podcast, including both his parents, who are now in other marriages, to talk about divorce and several aspects of divorce, from how it's affected the family, how the LDS Church did or didn't play a role, lessons that can be learned, and where everybody is today. So that is going to be today's topic on the podcast, and I would like to do a roll call, and beginning in a patriarchal order, I would like to first introduce Papa. Papa, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Papa is the former patriarch and of this family. Mama, are you there?
I am.
Thanks for joining us, Mom.
Thanks.
And Glenn, you're the grand master of this orchestration.
Are you there, Glenn? Yeah, I prefer puppet master, but I'll take grand.
Puppet master? Okay. Glenn, thanks for joining us and for coming up with this idea. Jeff, Glenn's brother, are you there, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Hello.
And we have Melissa.
Hey, that's me.
Is there any sibling missing?
No, we
there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, we have a younger brother that was between me and Jeff who passed away after just
before
2 weeks.
Me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
only you.
He's probably with us in spirit.
Okay.
We feel that from time to time, but we're all complete.
But no living sibling.
No.
Nope.
No.
Okay. And we're spanning the globe, aren't we? We're not only in one country, we're in multiple countries. So you guys have gone to extra effort to be together. So thanks for joining us. I guess I thought it would make sense to begin by just giving a little bit of history. So why don't we start with Papa just telling us a tiny bit about himself, being as generic as he'd like to be.
Papa is a senior citizen at this point, active in the church all his life, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, active and involved in the church all their lives. Graduated from BYU. I'm an attorney by profession, trial attorney by choice. And how much more do you want?
That sounds good. Thank you. How about you, Mom?
Yes, I also grew up in a multi-generational LDS family, and family across the plains, all of that, active in the church, and have a strong testimony. I also have had a lot of education. I have a doctorate and graduated from ASU. And what else do you want to know?
And Mom and Dad, would you guys characterize yourselves as sort of literal true believing types within the church?
I don't know. That's a hard question. Literal?
Yes.
True believing?
Let me answer that question for you, Mom. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. My children say yes, and I think that, and I am, but I.
But Mom is supporting Democrats, so there is a little bit.
So she's suspect.
I am a delegate to the state convention for the Democrats, so.
Point five.
I'm a little. I'm having second thoughts, actually.
Yeah.
About this whole thing.
Yeah.
How would you classify yourself, Dad?
I wouldn't classify myself as a typical true believer. I don't consider myself to be a member of the sheep that follow along blindly. I consider myself very active in the church and very much a believer in the church, but not because somebody else has spoken.
I don't think that's what they meant.
I just mean, well, this is the one and only true church.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And like if I try to classify you, Dad, I would say that you kind of that you come out of the Bruce R. McConkie, Hugh Nibley, kind of model of how to explore Mormonism and interpret Mormonism, and not to suggest that you're following blindly, but that's kind of how I, if I have to characterize where I kind of put you in that area, do you think that's fair?
I think it's very flattering.
Okay. Well, that speaks volumes.
Yeah. I like to test and prod and come to my own conclusions and I like to go outside of what's normal mainstream. For example, I don't know too many people that go looking for Pseudepigraphas or Septuagint, but I do.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay.
And Mom, where did you and Papa meet?
We met at an institute dance at ASU.
How cute.
Okay.
That's awesome. And then how comfortable are we about talking about some of the things that maybe led to the divorce?
Probably rather not.
So no explanation of that, just kind of.
And then it was.
And it came to pass that.
And it came to pass.
Well, what if, you know, what if maybe, I mean, I think that would be difficult for Mom or Dad to say, you know, their side of things, but maybe if one of us as a child, you know, maybe a third party observer kind of could give, you know, good and bad on both sides, so it didn't feel like it was just one side being represented. Is that, or no?
I'm all for it. You know, for me, I think one of the things to say at the very beginning is that here we've got five people who each have a different experience with this, and we each have our own perspective, and in some cases those perspectives clash. And you know, so one of the things for me at least that we've had to do is figure out how to love and coexist and not be judgmental in those areas where there's a conflict and clashing. So I think we need to be careful with those areas of conflict, but I also think it's really important to not ignore it.
Well, and I guess that's the, you know, where we are is that really hasn't been talked about a lot, at least among any of us. And so to talk about it here for the first time would be pretty hard. And I don't see this as a family therapy session. It's just something where we're telling our stories kind of thing. And so I'm not totally opposed to what you're suggesting, Missy. I think that could maybe work.
Sure.
I mean, I'm open to ideas that people have. So, I mean, I'm not wanting to be closed. I'm just trying to see, I mean, what this conversation is about tonight, I think, is trying to figure out where the boundaries are and what, you know, what we're trying to accomplish and how best to do that and still have everybody be in a good place.
And yeah. I have conversations with you, Mom, and I've had a few lately with you, Dad. Several with Missy, some with Jeff, that I would love to go back and listen to, because the things that you say are awesome. and then it's kind of gone. Like, I can remember them, I can recall them, but to be able to go back and re-listen to them and have that be something that I could share with my kids would be really valuable to me. And especially when we're discussing these kind of topics. And not that we have to agree on what our combined story is, but even just that journey of searching for meaning, I think is really interesting, and I like.
Well, I think it is important at least to just address that. I mean, I think a lot of times when people hear a family's, you know, having a divorce, their mind automatically will think like, oh, well, what was wrong? Who cheated? Was it abuse? You know, you think of those kinds of, you know, really big dramatic things. And in our situation, there wasn't anything like that, which makes it, you know, emotionally a little bit trickier. But I think that could be an important part for people to know that it was, you know, just maybe simply, you know, seemed to be incompatibility, or however we want to just say it even that way, just so that it's not, you know, like there was some horrific event that caused a split. I think that, you know, even that information could be useful.
And I've had conversations both with Dad and Mom as you've kind of worked through the dissonance that the church teaches one thing about marriage and divorce, but what you've actually experienced through your divorce in your current marriages, you're in a much better, happier place, and you're thankful. I mean, how can you say that you're thankful for divorce? That seems so contrary to anything that we hear in the church and the messages that we have of families can be together forever. But here you have this experience. So how do you reconcile that? And when in your case, Mom, because there wasn't any obvious reason that people on the outside could see, you know, why you made the decision to divorce, you had to carry all that alone. And, you know, you felt very judged by us, by me, people around you. And it was a very lonely experience for you. If I can imagine that there might be somebody in that same place that you're in right now hearing your experience going through it that could take some hope from it. And again, I don't think it's crucial, like John says, to get into a lot of details. But the point that Missy makes is really, I think, important. Because,
well, I'm good with that. Yeah. I'm good with that kind of broad brush stroke is fine. I'm fine with that.
Dan, you've been quiet.
That's right. I'm listening.
What do you think?
What's the score?
Yeah, exactly.
On which game?
I don't even know who's got the ball.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Well, let me throw my two cents in words. For just a minute. John, I'm a trial lawyer. I've learned over the 40 years I've been doing this that you get five people in a room who all experience the same event, and if you get the same story, they've contrived it. If you get variations on a theme, it's probably true. People remember and they experience an event based upon their history. And so it's logical that different people viewing or living through the same event are going to have differing memories and expectations and thoughts concerning that event. And you're going to hear that, I suspect, if we go forward tonight and get into any kind of detail. So that's item number one. Item number two, as far as I'm concerned, I'm here because my children want me here, presumably to ask questions of me, to get answers from me, or to hear me chime in. But I mean, it's a trite phrase, and I hate to use it, but I've moved on. I don't think I need this session to put either my physical life, my marital life, or present or past, or my spiritual life into any kind of perspective. I'm comfortable with who and where I am. But I'm more than happy to try and assist the kids if they have questions or they want to know how I dealt with things. I'm happy to give my experience, but I don't think I need to be here, you know, to tell my story or to get any kind of a specific point across. I'm here to listen and answer the question. End of comment.
So answer the question. Are you comfortable with what we've just talked about? I love you. I didn't mean that. Sound like,
that's all right.
Funny. Like, we asked a question, and I appreciate what you said. I mean, I don't think any of us are really doing it for. I mean, I think we all feel comfortable, and we've all moved on, and I think that's one reason why we're all able to be here and be able to discuss
it.
Not
a problem.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I don't think it's any, you know, therapy for any of us, but it is important to make sure that what we discuss, everybody feels comfortable with the information shared, you know, and that's what we're just wanting to know, if you're feeling comfortable with what we were talking about.
As you've asked that question, no.
Care to expound?
I did.
He wants to just answer questions, yes or no. Is that what I understood from that?
No. I'll explain. Well, Missy, I thought I gave an explanation. Maybe I should have prefaced the explanation by saying, no, I'm not totally comfortable with it because I don't really.
But you're willing to do it because you think that we would be able to be beneficial. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't think I need it. I don't think it's going to do any benefit for your mother necessarily. But if it helps you kids, I'm more than happy. And if it helps your mother, I'm more than happy.
Okay.
But would I choose to spend my evening this way? No, it's a little awkward for me, and it's a little painful for me, but I'm willing to do it. So as you've asked that question, no, but I'm willing to do it.
Well, thank you.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Having thrown a bucket of cold water on everything.
You know, that is how I would expect all of you to feel. So, when Glenn proposed this to me, I was like, "Whoa, really? Like, really?"
Yeah.
We were all like that a little bit.
Well, and I've got to say, Dad, I felt a little bit sad listening to what you've said, and I accept it all. I understand it all. But as you have moved on, and as Mom has moved on, I don't feel like we've moved on together, and I don't know even what that means to say. You know, what does it mean for you to be a part of my life and for me to be a part of your life? But especially the last few years have felt strained, and so there is an element of therapy for me in this that I do feel like there's wounds that can be healed, and that this is a means to that end. So I appreciate you coming on and doing this, and I know it's not something that you're comfortable with and maybe don't see any personal value in it for yourself, but I would hope that as far as our relationship, you and I, and maybe extending to Jeff and Missy as well, as we go forward, you know, you and Mom are divorced from each other, but from the kids, we're still part of both of your lives, and it's trying to figure out how to be a part of those lives that's been kind of difficult over the last 13 years.
Well, I think you've heard me say virtually the same thing you just said. Your mother and I are divorced from each other, but you're our children. You're right. Always going to be our children. She's always your mother, and I'm always going to be your father. And just because we didn't last doesn't mean that our relationship, meaning the children and the parents, won't last or shouldn't last.
Yeah.
But your mother and I don't have anything in common with one another anymore. I mean, we're human beings and we live here on the planet, and I don't bear any animosity towards her. I doubt that she does towards me, but
well, you've got three things in common.
We have more than
we're now with Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of things in common in that context, Glenn, but
I don't expect you and Mom to be interacting and going out for lunch or anything like that. I'm not that expecting that. Jeff, you've been quiet. What do you think about all this? Because you're kind of on the outside in a couple different ways. You've been outside of Arizona maybe longer than any of us, and having left the church when you were 17, 18 years old, have kind of been outside from that point of view as well. So what are your thoughts on doing this?
I mean, you know, this is, it kind of opens up a can of worms for me, but, you know, I like the way that you put it, Glenn, is that, you know, we have all moved on, and I mean, it goes without saying, and have we all moved on together? You know, maybe some of us more than others. I mean, I feel that I have a good relationship with both mom and dad, and I know that there have been issues that everybody's had, you know. I mean, that's just life, but everybody deals with their issues a little bit differently, and that's why when you had proposed this, I mean, I think this is great. I mean, when was the last time that we all spoke together?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, like, it made me sad when I read that email, like, thinking of us as all, like, I just don't think of us as a family, like in the traditional sense of it. Like, I love all of you, and obviously we are family, but like, just, you know, the family, like, it just doesn't exist anymore.
But I guess one of the questions I'm having, and maybe it can be a point of discussion, is, Glenn, what, you know, you said, what is your idea of what is it that feels missing to you that you're hoping to achieve through this? In terms of family, what is it that you would like to get?
We want our mom and dad together again.
We're laughing, but that's really not funny.
Oh, it is funny at this point. At this point in our life, I mean, come on. What's not funny about it is the hurt that I see that Curtis has when he tells me those same words right there. I mean, that's... Right, that's not funny because that is real, but that's also fresh, and it's also...
Who's Curtis? You know,
Curtis is Jeff's son.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff's son. Yeah.
But that's also coming from you know, in immature point of view, somebody who just doesn't, you know, have the life experience to understand that, you know, there is a, you know, real change that's going to happen, and life's not easy. So, I mean... Yeah, we can laugh about that. Come on.
And that's a good answer, Jeff, to the question that mom asked me. I mean, like, what is it that I'm wanting to get out of her family? I want to be able to laugh at it. I mean, I want to be able to have things on top of the table and talk about them, laugh about them without hurting people's feelings with it. Because in the past, the way that I've dealt with things have been hurtful, and I don't want to be hurtful. But I also don't want to be silent and just bury things. So I want to find a way to help, a healthy way to discuss the way that this has impacted me, and just know that I'm heard. And then moving forward, we can joke about it, we can laugh about it, and realize it's not threatening.
Okay, Dad, are there things you wish you had done differently, or B, lessons that you learned or regrets that you have related to the divorce that you're comfortable talking about?
John, that's a difficult question for me to be able to answer, but I'm comfortable in trying to give you an answer.
Okay. So did you both have to each find a way to reconcile why did God tell you to get married and yet it didn't work out?
Yeah, I did.
No, not really.
Why not?
Well, you kind of cut to the nub of the experience that I had as a result of the divorce and during the divorce. And the nub of it is that my faith, if you will, or my concepts were reinforced mightily with respect to this concept of free agency, moral agency, if you will, that people can change, they can have experiences that are genuine and legitimate, but over the period of years, their attitudes change, circumstances change, and that which could have been no longer as comfortable. For example, or for a literal comment, we've tossed around the phrase, families can be forever. And most people, I guess, focus on the word forever. And I focus on the word can. It's not a for sure thing. It takes work, it takes effort, it takes cooperation, it takes long suffering. It takes enduring to the end. It's not a guaranteed for sure thing. It's just a beginning. And it's a concept. It's a concept that has great potential, but it doesn't yet realized without a lot of work.
So, Dad, can I cut you off here just for a minute? Because I can imagine if I'm mom and I'm listening to this, that I might be thinking, oh, is he blaming me for being the one that changed or being the one that, you know, didn't stick with it? Do you see, like, going back to John's earlier question, that there were things that you could have done or should have done differently in that to make it so that families can be together forever?
I short answer, yes. Okay. Explanation. I think I've told each one of you, Satan except John, over the years that I'm confident that I could have done something better. I could have done probably lots of things better. I'm confident that I am to blame in major respects for the breakup. I'm not sure what they are. I don't know what they are. And that's why I said earlier, John, in response to your question, yeah, I'm willing to talk about my perceptions of what happened, but I'm not really sure what happened. All I know is that at points in time, things weren't going the way they were supposed to be going. And, you know, is it a blaming of your mother? I don't want to necessarily blame, but the facts are the facts.
Okay. So one thing that, one theme that just comes out for me, and this comes out for me in all the counseling and therapy that I do, is that there are some families that talk about everything, and there are some families that barely talk about anything, and just have major elephants in the room for decades, and it just never gets talked about. Is that a topic worth discussing here?
I think we are discussing the elephant.
Right.
I think it's what Glenn's trying to get to is let's talk about the elephant. At least, is that what I'm getting, Glenn, from you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because
I think that there are certain things that we're able to talk about and certain things that we've tried to talk about and without much success. I don't know that we're one of those families, at least my experience hasn't been, that we're one of those families that just hides things and doesn't talk. But
no.
I don't know that the environment has always been very receptive to that.
Right.
With
my dad more than my mom. But I also feel like the skills of being able to deliver a message in a safe way haven't been there either on my part. Like years ago, maybe 7-8 years ago, I wrote this essay that was just very biting. You know, it was this, I was at a creative writing program and it was this satirical essay, and it just kind of like took on my dad and took on my mom and brought all these things up that neither of them appreciated. I think Jeff and Missy liked it, but it was something that was not healthy to do. I mean, for me at the time, I felt a need to like lash out and express it, but it wasn't done in a way that created any kind of healing. And I think, you know, I'm encouraged that we're all able to be on together to have this discussion, to feel like we've been able to overcome that, and that I've regained some trust with my parents, and they can feel safe in the way that I do that. So I don't think it's just on the that we haven't been willing to talk about it, but maybe haven't known how to talk about it in a good way or how to receive it in a good way.
And definitely just never talked about it all together. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, we've probably had conversations with each other about the things, but, yeah, you know, not something where we're all giving equal input. And
yeah.
Okay.
In other words, I think we're all in a little healthier place now than we have been before.
Yeah.
That's great. So just in a tactical, from a tactical standpoint, was this amicable, or did one leave first and the other is?
It's your turn, Mom.
I was going to say, Glenn.
It's your turn, Mom.
I was just waiting to listen. I left.
Okay.
And it wasn't amicable.
Well, I wouldn't say that it was ugly. Nobody fought or screamed. There were no blows thrown on either side to either party. No obscene words or gestures.
But emotionally, very.
Yeah, there were verbal and emotional blows, and sometimes still are a little bit.
Okay.
Well, of course. I mean, the fact that both of you are on the phone now shows, amazingly low percentile, in terms of, amicability, I would say.
I'm pretty confident to say that both my parents' current marriages will last. Yeah. My mom's on third and dad's on second from what I see, and it's just a small piece. Very compatible together and in very good place.
Agreed.
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 Dad, you better say something.
I think we lost him or something.
I'm here taking it all in. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
So I guess we don't need to dig too much into the early years of the marriage, because this is mostly about the divorce. But let me give both Papa and Mom each a chance to just reflect a little bit on some of the high points or some of the main signposts in the marriage prior to the divorce, to the extent that you're comfortable talking. And again, you can be as long or as brief as you want. So Papa, any degree to which you want to describe the marriage, just to give our listeners some color for the marriage prior to the divorce?
Well, the marriage prior to the divorce, I would characterize really as two marriages. The first 20 or so years I thought were very good and rewarding and mutually rewarding and mutually fulfilling. The last seven or so were not so fulfilling. Not so enjoyable.
Okay.
You want details?
No, that's a good start. Mom, would you add or detract anything from that?
Yeah, my experience was different than that. I would say that there was a desire on my part for the great bulk of the marriage, easily from the beginning, wanting to communicate things that didn't get heard. And so I didn't see it as two marriages. I just saw it getting more and more challenging.
So going from not so good to worse over the 20X years?
And I don't want to necessarily pick that, and I don't want to say that every minute was like that, but, you know, because that's not true. But my experience was different.
Sure. I guess... Let me start by backing up a bit. Papa, do you feel like you sort of made a specific prayer to Heavenly Father to confirm whether or not this was someone you were supposed to marry?
Yes.
And do you feel like you got that answer?
Yes.
Okay. And how about you, Mom?
Same thing.
Okay, so you both feel like this was something Heavenly Father led you to do.
I don't know that he led me to do it as much as I was moving in that direction, sought confirmation, and believed that I received it.
Gotcha.
And let me ask a follow-up to that. I'm curious, if you don't mind me jumping in, John. With you, Mom, when you received that, was it the first time, or did it take a couple of times to get that confirmation?
It was the third time that he had asked me to marry him, because I'd said no the first two times, and... the third time, I asked if we prayed about it, and it seemed like it felt good. So.
And how old were you, yes. Mom? How old were you?
I was 19.
Okay, and you, Pop?
26.
26. So it's a 7-year difference.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. Mom, do you look back and feel like you might have been a little too young to make that decision?
Oh, sure. That's one of the thoughts I've had.
Maybe it was a little bit too early.
19's awfully young.
Did you give Melissa different advice when she was starting?
I was wondering if she was trying to be politically correct, because I was also married at 19. But we can get into that more later. I felt that through seeing what my parents had gone through, that I was wise enough to make that choice at that age, although I can still say it's definitely too young. Happy things have worked out, but it's definitely too young.
But I think you need to tell him the story of what I told you.
It's only funny to you, Mom.
I want to hear it.
No, she always said that that I had to be 23 or have a degree to get married.
And I told her that I was playing tape when she was asleep at night saying 23 or a degree, so it was subliminal.
You know what? I tell my daughters the same thing, and you're not giving me much hope, Melissa.
Well, I was just very clever, according to Mom. And so although I was only 19 years old in age, I had acquired a degree of my trade. I'm a hairstylist, so I gone to beauty school, and I had my degree, and we were married on May 23rd, coming up on our on our 9th anniversary.
So it was 23 and a degree.
I just found the loophole.
You're playing
that's the legal part. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's your daughter coming out in you, Melissa. That's your father coming out in you. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, can I ask you guys one question that's just informed by my experience?
Sure.
As I've contemplated divorce and remarriage myself, I have this impression that if I were to divorce my wife because of ways that we couldn't get along or irreconcilable differences, and I were to remarry, I could easily see the same types of issues that I had a problem with my first wife just eventually reoccurring and sort of me fleeing from a situation to avoid some of the hard work of just making a relationship work and realizing that I fled something that just returned in a different way with a different spouse. And I'm wondering whether either of you experienced something like that, where you felt like, oh, this isn't working, I'm going to go find somebody else. And you either got the same type of bag in some ways and had to deal with the same type of demons, or you got a mixed bag that was comparable, just a different set of issues. Do either of those resonate with either of you, or has it been like hell and now you're in heaven?
Pretty much.
Which one?
Well, that's strong and not kind, and I don't want to not be kind, but the latter is more the truth. But I'm trying not to be that strong.
I think you guys are more compatible with your current spouses than you were
definitely
together.
More compatible. You know, the kinds of things you're talking about, I think, are things that people that happen and people often worry about. You know, my rebound marriage was like 180 degrees different than my first marriage. There couldn't have been anything more different, hardly. And
and that's probably something that we need to talk about a little, but probably not a lot, right, Mom?
Yeah, that works.
It could promote the CD, though.
Well, I was gonna ask.
Is the CD still at Deseret Book? I mean, hey,
it is in Cedar City.
should we ask John to use any of the Sculptor's Hand track as bumper music for the podcast?
Oh my gosh, that would be awesome! No, it wouldn't. He's dying. Somebody's got to tell him, Mom.
I'll tell him. Go ahead. You want to do it, Jeff?
No. You got it, Glenn.
So her second marriage was a guy that just was a really interesting experience. It only lasted 3 years, and
he was bipolar and a cocaine addict. Does that tell you?
Yeah.
Right. What was the first part? I heard the second part.
He was bipolar.
Oh yeah, that's a problem.
And a crack. Not cocaine, crack. It's the same thing, but it's different.
Okay, well,
thanks, Jeff.
Let's just clarify.
And so during their time together, they made a Christian music CD with music that he had written when he was in prison.
And awesome.
It's pretty awesome. And
it's a great story.
And he he sounds like a Muppet. And when when a CD came out, we teased her mercifully about it, and it wasn't
mercifully versus mercilessly.
Oh,
yes.
Mercilessly about it.
Yes.
Oh no, I was merciful.
No, you were.
No, you should have seen what I was really thinking.
To your face, yeah.
But, yeah, so that marriage lasted about 3 years, was it, Mom?
Well, it actually lasted about two, but then the divorce took a year.
Okay.
So yeah, the one that I'm in now is so incredibly compatible, and things that I think that I learned, that I think that I repented through, things that I learned with, are so in place, and I've been very blessed. So that's how I feel.
Okay.
From an outsider looking at both of you, I see kind of the compatibility issues as being key to where you find satisfaction in your relationship. And I think even, Mom, with your marriage, with his bipolar crack problems, I think you probably engaged with him more maybe in some kind of an intimate connection way than maybe you did with Dad.
I did.
And,
I did.
And that's my guess. Yeah. And I don't know, Dad, that you like really understand that part of it from your time with Mom. But I see with your relationship with that you do both have that very like together intimate mindset, definitely something that Mom has with. I think Missy and Jeff and I in our marriages have all asked ourselves the same questions that you asked yourself, John. If we continue in the marriage or if we leave, is it going to be a fix to our problems to bring in another person? Or are we just bringing our baggage in and we're going to have the same problems with somebody else? And one of the troubling things maybe is that when we look at our parents' example, and having another person has been a good fix for them. And, you know, Jeff's just recently divorced, and we're all hoping that he'll find somebody that will be a better fit for him. My wife and I have struggled, and we'll probably continue to struggle in certain areas, but I think we're better than we have been in the past. And Missy's had her struggles as well, so we're still trying to hold on to it. But that fear of just taking our baggage with somebody else, that the pot has been totally, you know, the lid has totally been lifted off of that pot, you know, and we could see, maybe with somebody else there would be a better fit. We can see that in our parents' examples.
Yeah, because that's an important question then that comes from all this is, how do you reconcile the church's emphasis on the importance of marriage, of eternal families, of the solemn covenant, and the fact that you both were told by God to get married, with the notion that through your divorce you found people you're more compatible with and are much happier about, and no yes. harm, no foul, you're both sealed to your spouses.
Right.
So, like, what? So.
They just had to have me, John.
And me.
And Jeff.
Yeah.
And Mark.
I could have been thrown away, I think.
No. No, I mean, I think, John, too, I mean, speaking from my own experience, that's one thing that's been really hard for me and my faith struggles is. If I can believe that I feel that the family ever really was, you know, like ordained, our family specifically, like ordained of God, or was it, I can see very much, you know, cultural and social pressures put on, you know, the young marriage, and that happens a lot in the church. So.
For me, it's been a lot about the Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail, all these things she'll give the experience, you know, and some things that you said in earlier podcasts, John, about why stay in the church if you're feeling out of place. you know, what better place to practice Christian values than with people that make you nuts, you know? I look at marriage, you know, sometimes when I'm in those places where I am feeling like I'm going nuts, I go, okay, this is a good laboratory to be in to say, how am I going to react to this? And you know, what kind of person am I going to become with these experiences? So that's how the gospel has helped me with that.
Right.
And to me, part of what I see in it too, of how I make sense of it is, you know, that the atonement is very real, and it's not just something for after this life, but it's something that can bless us right now. And the growing, learning, willingness to repent and learn as we know, come to know who we are more, that, you know, life isn't static. And I think too often in the church, there's the idea that you have to hold on so tight to the rod that you're in a straitjacket, instead of that you're recognizing, you know what, there's going to be times when, I mean, there really is a need to call on the Lord constantly, and he really is a presence and does love and bless us no matter what, if we try. I just, you know, all we have to do is kind of try a little bit. That's kind of where I come on it.
Okay. Well, we talked beforehand about not necessarily needing to get into the actual, you know, events that immediately led to the divorce. But let's just ask, how was divorce first communicated to the children? Do any of you want to tell the story of how that was communicated, when and how?
Well, I'll tell my experience with it, and then you know, let Jeff and Missy have a stab at it. But for me, when it was kind of a slow process, and when I got back from my mission, I remember I'd only been home for a few days, and I was having a discussion with my mom late at night, and I said something like, you know, it really amazes me that you and Dad have been able to stay together, because I see that your personalities are so different, but I'm very impressed with that. And it, you know, the way that I remember it, it was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing. And she just broke down and unloaded a lot of the grief and the struggles that she was feeling, and kind of let me in on a piece of my parents' marriage that I kind of perceived, but I wasn't completely aware of. And so over the next several years, as you know, they struggled to make things work, you know, there would be times where she would talk to me about what was going on. And it was maybe 3 years or so after I got back from my mission that they actually made the decision to divorce and went through counseling for maybe a year, if I remember right. I was up at BYU while a lot of this was going on. And when they came for my graduation at BYU, I think that was probably a really dark trip for all of them. You know, Jeff, Missy as well, driving up in the van, probably a lot of tension. And my dad and I went out one night and had a really long discussion just walking through one of the neighborhoods in Provo, and it was really one of the first heart-to-hearts I felt like I ever had with my dad, where he was vulnerable and expressed his, you know, fear of what was happening with his marriage. And I started developing a closer relationship with my dad than I had before as a result of that, but I was also really disappointed in, you know, what I was seeing as my mom distancing herself and moving away. And so I got a little bit angry at that point. And maybe it was within a year that they physically separated, and then, you know, maybe a few months after that the divorce went through. But that was my experience with it.
Were you angry at your mom, Glenn?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was angry. I mean, I had anger for both of them. You know, like I didn't hold either of them blameless. And, you know, I look back on myself at that time, and I think, you know, I was much younger and less mature and very judgmental in my my attitude towards both of them. But I remember I was talking to my mom on the phone once and said that I had had a dream or some kind of a image in my head of my dad standing on a mountain and being like victorious, that, you know, whatever there was that was inside of him that was creating these difficulties for them in the mission, that he'd be able to overcome that, and that if she would just hang on, and, you know, that we would be able to have this, you know, together family, and that she didn't have to leave. And so I really wanted them to work it out and get to a better place together, and was disappointed when that didn't happen, and angry.
Let me ask all three of you a question before we jump back and get Jeff and Melissa's response to that question about when they first heard. Glenn, do you remember generally your parents being pretty happy while you were growing up? Do you think back of the family and fond memories of general happiness, or did you have signs early on or feelings of tension or concern in let's say junior high, high school?
No, years? I thought things were great. You know, I believed that other families might break up and get divorced, but my parents never would. And I felt like my dad was very attracted to my mom. You know, that there were a lot of physical demonstrations, you know, hugging her, you know, he'd pull her aside and say, you know, kids, this is, you know, the beautiful woman. And, you know, I mean, things like that, that I didn't see what was underneath those things and what was going on. I don't doubt now that it was there, but just that I didn't see it. And so I could see from them that, you know, mom was kind of more of an extrovert and dad was kind of more of an introvert. So I could see generally those things and recognize that they might not be completely compatible in some areas, but I didn't see that there were like any cracks in the foundation or anything like that.
Jeff, was your memory any different than Glenn's?
No, and, you know, I don't mean to cut Missy off. That one thing I was going to talk about is with the explanation of what I remember was I was in Wisconsin for the summer, and my parents both came and picked me up from the airport when I had gotten back. This is in 96. And took me out to, was it the Biltmore or something like that, in Phoenix to go see Independence Day. Before we did that, we went and ate at California Pizza Kitchen, and that's when they kind of dropped the bomb on me. Now, I was completely shocked because as I was out in Wisconsin for the summer, really my first stretch of time away from home, you know, I remember talking with all types of people that I was rooming with and, you know, telling, you know, everybody how my family life was good and it just seemed like my parents were falling more in love every day. I mean, that's one of the catchphrases that I recall from growing up that mom and dad would always talk about was that, you know, every day that goes on, you know, I'm falling more in love with your mother, or I'd hear things like that. So, you know, spending time away from a Mormon culture, because I don't even think I saw a church in the area of Wisconsin that I was at. And, you know, there were lots of people who had come from divorce. And, you know, I just remember thinking, you know, how good that felt to be in that kind of a situation. And then, boom, I get back and get hit with the fact that they were going through a divorce. And I was like, wow, that was definitely a shocker.
Right.
Did they tell you divorce, Jeff, at that time? Or did they just say they were struggling?
Yes. No. It was pretty much it hit the wall, so.
All right, Melissa, tell me if you have any different recollections than Glenn or Jeff about your parents' marriage, the health of their marriage, and then tell us about the day you heard.
No, just like my brothers. I mean, I felt the same way, kind of like what Jeff was saying. I don't know if it was the fact that they had already been married for 26 years, so I felt like if anything were ever to have happened, it probably would have happened already. Like, we were kind of in the clear once we made it that far. I
I specifically remember talking to a girl in sixth grade, and you know, there's 5 years gap between all of us, so you know, all of our age difference at the time is very different. But I remember talking to a girl, and you know, she was talking about how there's no such thing as a happy marriage. And like, yes, there is. My parents have been married for 26 years, and they're happy. And, you know, of course, at the time, I just chalked it up to, like, she's not Mormon. She doesn't understand what Mormon families are. You know, my family's special. And also, like Glenn was saying, you know, I definitely recognize that my parents had different personalities. I still see that difference. But I never questioned it growing up. I always saw them kissing and hugging, and I was surprised. But like Glenn had mentioned, thinking about tension on the drive up to his graduation, for me, I was still clueless. I was the last one to find out, I think even a year after they had told you, Jeff, because I don't think I found out, and then Mom moved out like 2 months later.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was really hard because I had no time to process it. And I think back now, I don't know if I would have wanted to know. I think maybe I could have handled it a little bit better. I still was just very angry for a long time. But as far as the specifics go, from what I remember, Dad was out of town. I don't know where he was, but I remember being in our family room and Mom saying that she needed to talk to me and she needed to tell me something. And I could tell in the tone of her voice that it was something serious. And even though up till that time I had never really entertained the idea, as we were walking back to her room to have this discussion, I knew exactly what she was going to tell me. And I still, you know, can't quite describe why that thought came into my mind, rather than, you know, I've always kind of just thought maybe it was the spirit trying to help me to prepare for the bombshell that was about to come. But yeah, I remember talking with her and just bawling, and I just was shocked. I did not see it coming at all. So.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.